happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about the Southern Diet from University of Alabama, how it could raise your risk of a heart attack, and from the universities of Antwerp and Hasselt in Belgium, chickenpox vaccination increases shingles cases in young people, mainly in the United States. We see it in older people. How a high-fat diet triggers a dangerous activity in common genes from the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute. And royal jelly. We haven't heard about royal jelly in probably decades. It was very popular in the 1960s. Well, it should be popular today, and I'll explain why. And a lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to look at many different topics that you've shown interest in. For example, how over 600 pharmaceutical drugs are polluting our drinking water and environment. We're also going to look at how smart meters that are mandated by the government are spontaneously exploding, setting off fires in private homes. We're also going to look at the complete failure of our drug-based mental health system and what can be done about it, and that will be from Kelly Patricia O'Meara. And we're going to look at how Obama sells out human health and the environment, making nuclear energy the centerpiece of climate policy. We'll also have some additional audio clips from Is Britain a Racist Nation to the Core? Well, that's from Frankie Boyle's a great television program, and it has one of the most articulate, insightful explanations you could imagine. Then we're going to look at a flash mob at Five Points South in Birmingham, Alabama. And I think you'll find this fun, upbeat, positive. I love this kind of music. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. And I will be setting time aside today for talk back on some issues. But wait before you call in so I can share the issue with you. I grew up in the South. Any place south of the Mason-Dixon line, which runs through West Virginia, is considered South. North of that is considered North. And people really take their culture seriously, including their food. Someone presented me this week with a newspaper article from a local newspaper in Ohio about the Appalachian dialect. Well, I grew up in Appalachia. And growing up, I met a lot of people, both in my family and in my travels, who speak a unique type of Americana. And once you're there and you hear them, it's easy to understand them. And what you don't understand what you're saying, you certainly understand by their body language. But the diet is always interesting. The diet of people in Atlanta is different than that in Charlotte, which is different than that in Huntington, West Virginia. But all of it has something in common. Whether it's the crayfish down in New Orleans that they eat by the ton, and or whether it's the chitlins they eat in South Carolina. It's a bad diet. It's unhealthy. It causes disease. You see it in so many of the people. In fact, every single major study shows that the sickest people in America, physically ill, are in the southern states. Alabama, Louisiana, Kentucky, Mississippi, Georgia. in North and South Carolina. According to the University of Alabama, if your dinner plate often includes fried chicken, gravy-smothered liver, buttered rolls, and sweet tea, and that's a standard, your heart is going to be affected. Here's what they say from the peer-reviewed journal Circulation. Quote, eating a Southern-style diet is associated with an increased risk of heart disease. Now, in a large-scale study that explored the relationship between dietary patterns and heart disease risk, researchers found that people who regularly ate traditional Southern fare, which they characterized as fried foods, fatty foods, eggs, processed meats, such as bacon and ham, they forgot bologna, everyone I knew ate bologna, organ meats like liver and sugary drinks were at a higher risk of suffering a heart attack or a heart-related death during the next 5.8 years. And previous research also linked the Southern diet with increased stroke risk. When I was researching my documentary on diabetes, all of the studies showed an increased risk of diabetes from the same diet, including in children. The study is important because it included a regional and socioeconomic diverse population. Researchers compared the dietary habits of more than 17,000 white and African American adults in different regions in the United States, and after adjusting for a combination of demographic and lifestyle factors, along with energy intake, that's what they found. So, what are we talking about? We're talking about if you are an African American or a Caucasian and you're living in the South and you eat the traditional Southern food of North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Louisiana, you're at risk of a heart attack or stroke. That's a takeaway message, and it doesn't matter whether you're female or male, it doesn't matter what your race is, you're at risk. I had hoped that there would be a movement towards healthier eating. There is not. In fact, there's not even a healthier eating movement in Florida. And even in southern Florida, even in Naples, you go to a health food store and you find that everything they serve is organic, but it's meat, eggs, dairy, heavy, heavy fats. Vegan restaurants, rare. Only one, and that's not really a healthy vegan restaurant I know of that I found. Go over to South Beach, where all those millions of visitors are and hundreds of thousands of people live. The restaurants, not healthy food. Not at all. Expensive food and gourmet, but gourmet unhealthy food, from my personal opinion. You will find some farmers markets. So what you have are people who are interested in health, and there are many people interested in health in those states. They will go to a farmer's market or one of the few health food stores, buy their foods, or grow their own foods. Whereas if you went to a place where people are known to appreciate healthy foods, you know, like Dallas, Austin, Boulder, Taos, Los Angeles, you can find a lot of healthy menus and hence healthier people. We've been told all about the vaccines. This is from two different universities, Antwerp University and Hasselt in Belgium, and they came up with some really interesting information. Here's what they say. I'll quote, vaccinating one-year-olds against chickenpox could temporarily nearly double the incidence of shingles in the wider population, but in younger adults than previously thought. The effect occurs because vaccination reduces the likelihood of adults who experienced chickenpox as a child being re-exposed to the virus. Re-exposure boosts immunity to shingles caused by the same virus, the Varicella zoster virus. This was published in Peer Review Journal. So they were surprised to see this. That's what they say here. Quote, we were surprised to find this happening. And whereas if you have chickenpox, you're immune for life. But if you had the vaccine, then you're likely now to show, in young people as well as older, more shingles. One more reason why you should question the safety and efficacy before you decide. From the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute, a surprise discovery that led to a novel treatment for obesity and type 2 diabetes, and the studies led by Professor Proud, quote, by working as we did in this experiment, they found that high-fat diets, that's your typical American diet, high in fat, even if it's low in sugar, it's high in fat, triggers a dangerous activity in a common gene. It is called the MNK gene, and it alters it. Quote, with a high-fat diet, the mice without the MNK are protected from accumulating high levels of body fat, developing diabetes, and displaying inflammation in their fat tissue. End quote. So what you do not want at any time, you do not want to have any form of inflammation in your fat. You don't want to develop diabetes, and you don't want high levels of fat in the body. And yet that's what's happening genetically because you're eating a high-fat diet. I was giving a lecture this morning. Yesterday I gave 7 lectures for about 8 hours throughout the day. We're finishing a retreat to help our sister station, and some really nice people are attending, and they're getting a tremendous amount of insight and good from this. And so I'm happy to do that. But throughout the day I'll do lectures, and I did a lecture this morning after taking people out on a walk on a country road and enjoying nature. And today they sat in a butterfly garden with hundreds of butterflies and meditated, just being present. And then someone asked me about gout. And I said, what do you think is the best way of approaching gout? Well, you know, there's medicines. I've been taking medicines. And I said, do you know what causes gout? Well, no, something in my blood. I said, gout's primarily caused by eating meat or having alcohol or particular high-purine foods, which are, for example, the purines are found naturally in many foods, and your body breaks them down into uric acid. But too much uric acid in your blood causes gout. Now, some foods are really bad, and you should never have them. Organ meats, liver, kidneys, shouldn't have those. Sardines, anchovies, they're very high in purines, P-U-R-I-N-E-S, and they can cause flare-ups. And the good news is that you can turn off gout and prevent gout, which, by the way, is a swelling and a great deal of pain. And you have to immediately drink a lot of water when you start to have any form of inflammation. Remember, the first thing anyone in this audience should do when you feel pain anywhere in your body, drink a lot of water. Now, I also believe that everyone in this audience should carry in a little tiny package, a little packet of some kind. 3 high heat, extra high heat cayenne pepper capsules. 3 400 milligram to 500 milligram magnesium citrate, C-I-T-R-A-T-E, citrate capsules. 5,000 milligram vitamin C capsules. And 2,000 milligrams of coenzyme Q10, and keep that in on you. Why? Because if you start to have a heart attack or a stroke, if you took everything I just mentioned, it could help stop the stroke and save your life, or heart attack and save your life. So for the little bit of money, the few dollars, and the little bit of inconvenience of having this with you, you could save yourself or someone else from a stroke. But with gout, you always want to drink water, lots of water. Hydrate yourself thoroughly, and best to put some lemon juice in it. And one study showed that men who drank 5 to 8 glasses of water in a 24-hour period had a 40% lower risk of gout. But also, all your sugar sodas, bad to the bone. They will cause a flare-up. Now, weight loss is the most effective way to manage gout. But you also may be benefiting from eating low-purine foods. And low purine foods would be beans, lentils, asparagus. They have very few purines. And fruits, oh, they're terrific for you. And the fruits with vitamin C, and the best would be tangerines and oranges, can prevent a gout attack. And also cherries and cherry juice can prevent or stop a gout attack. So choose your food. Sweet potatoes are good. And you want complex carbohydrates, high fiber foods, and those would be terrific. And also the essential fatty acids. That would be cold water fish like salmon, or vegan sources such as walnut, flax seeds are excellent too. The fatty acids help lower inflammation. So use a fatty acid rich diet. Use olive oil, coconut oil. These are all good for you. No alcohol, because any alcohol raises your risk of gout. So let's just say that you're having a glass of wine with a meal, and you have meat in the meal. You have two items that are definitely going to contribute to your gout: the alcohol and the meat, the purines. And beer, by the way, is the worst, and you don't want to have beer because it contains yeast, and that is a problem. And it will raise your gout. And no caffeine either. Caffeine is not good. No meat, no caffeine, and eliminate the purines. One study found that peas, beans, mushrooms, cauliflower, spinach are good for you, and they can cause a gout problem. Millions of Americans suffer from inflammation in their joints, and that's one way to stop them. I remember when I was wanting to go to a vegetarian meeting. I'd never been to one. And so a friend of mine said, there's a vegetarian meeting this summer, when I first came to New York City, upstate New York. So we took a bus up, and we went up to Livingston Manor, up above Liberty, New York, in Monticello, about 2.5 hours from New York City. And sure enough, there was a conference. There were about 60 people. I'm guessing the average age was about 70. Here we're in our early 20s. But the people were very cordial. They were all very nice. And the food was the most boring food I've ever seen. Everything tasted like little mud balls. Everything looked like little mud balls. I don't care what it was. They seemed to grind it all up, roll it into a bowl, and cook it. And it wasn't the most exciting or interesting conversation. But one man there was kind of like the leader of the group, and he was very fit. He was thin but strong and prided himself in his physical activity. He had been a follower of Bernard McFadden, the great voice of the health movement in the teens and 20s and 30s and 40s. In any case, he was about 90. And really, he said, you can tell the health of a person by looking at their tongue and the brightness of their eyes. And he had really bright eyes and a clean tongue. He said, and I take my royal jelly every day. How many of you take royal jelly? And all these people raised their hands. He said, well, you're doing a lot of good, because that's what the queen bee exclusively lives off of, and she lives a long life. And then we went out, and he was showing me the beehives. It was an old run-down place, a swimming pool that had no water in it and vines growing in it, and a backyard that is overgrown. Everything was overgrown and falling apart. But the people weren't. The people were very healthy. They weren't. They were not into the physical culture of exercising like we do today. But they were fit, and they didn't smoke or drink, and they were all nice. So it was a good experience. And I just kept focusing on the royal jelly, because I'd never had royal jelly before. And then I get the whole lecture on it. I said, tell me about royal jelly. Well, here's the message. And by the way, since maybe 5 years after that till now, I'm a beekeeper. I have bees now. In fact, I showed people yesterday a lecture on bees. You know, I can go up to a hive with no protection, never been stung by a honeybee ever, and you could have 1,000 bees on you. And do not fear them. you have to know what you're doing. You don't want to just go and do that because the average person's energy would change the energy of the bee and you end up in a hospital. But I don't take the honey from my bees. I leave it for them. In fact, not only do I leave it for them, in the wintertime, I put up wind barriers, which are just bales of hay higher than the beehive, so it breaks the wind from hitting the hive. And then I put a plate, just a regular glass plate, on a 6-foot, 7-foot pole, and I grease the pole. I put a grease on it so nothing can climb up it, because they will. Insects will climb up. And I then fill that each day with raw, organic, unheated honey. They thrive. No colony collapse because they're nourished. They have an abundance of food because just imagine this. In the spring, when everything is blossoming, all the bees have plenty of nectar. They have food. They have pollen. But what about in the winter? In the late fall, right through the spring, nothing is germinating. As a result, they have no food. So beehives are given glucose solution or fructose solution, which is not healthy for them, and they die. Or they're left out in the open weather, and with the Arctic winds we've had, they chill to death. So anyhow, there's a lot of things you can do if you're a bee master to work with them, and it's wonderful just to watch the butterflies all over the place and the bees all over the place, and you're sitting in the middle of them, and you're listening to the crickets, and you're feeling the warm breezes, and you're hearing the birds. It's just wonderful. And that's why I encourage anyone in this audience, go to the park, whatever park's near you. Be in nature, be around trees, be around these wonderful creatures. Well, bees are the ultimate givers of life and health in so many ways that we're not aware of. In fact, a good deal of all of the life on this planet depends upon these wonderful bees. For example, bees are responsible for 80% of the pollination needed for the existence of fruits and vegetables. That's 80%. The most common known bee product is, of course, honey, which has been consumed by humans for thousands of years. But royal jelly, in my opinion, deserves equal amount of attention. Why? Royal jelly is created within worker bee glands and fed to the hive queen. That results in a lifespan that is up to 40 times that of the worker bee and enables the queen to lay thousands of eggs every day. In traditional Chinese medicine, they recommend royal jelly to prevent premature aging, promote longevity, and improve sexual vigor. And due to challenges involved in extracting the substance, royal jelly was once available only to royalty. Royal jelly contains antioxidants, flavonoids. The flavonoids have antibacterial, antiviral, and anti-allergenic effects. They've also been shown to combat oxidative stress from exercise or disease, enhance your circulation, and decrease your capillary fragility, which means you're less likely to bruise and have little spider veins and varicosities. Royal jelly supports your healthy cholesterol level, which is not necessarily a low cholesterol level, because if you have too low a cholesterol level, you have about 1,000% chance of having a heart attack. So the myth of the lowest cholesterol is the best is not true. But it does help with maintain a healthy cholesterol level. It also was found to reduce fibrinogen and fibrinogen, fibrinogen. That's a blood clotting protein. And it helps reduce that, so you reduce the risk of blood clots, hence strokes and heart attacks. And it increases the good LDL cholesterol. And also it's been a bone builder. It helps to get minerals into your bones. And also, royal jelly was almost as effective as estrogen, a known bone builder, in preventing bone loss. And like honey, royal jelly has an antibacterial effect. In one study, they tested royal jelly and honey against a Pseudomonas, a disease-causing bacterium, and a combination of two substances demonstrated a greater antibacterial effect than either one alone, which was honey and royal jelly. They both worked against it. Together, they worked great. It also has longevity benefits. It's been known all over the world that the beekeepers who eat the royal jelly, because they have the access to it, have long lives. One study on mice that received royal jelly survived an average of 112 weeks, the same identical conditions and diet, but without the royal jelly, they survived 88 weeks. Wow. That's nearly 20 weeks difference. That's a long time. So royal jelly is one of the best single superfoods in all of the world. So that's our health and nutrition segment. We're going to take a brief break, listen to some inspiring music, and come right back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. I'm going to go through several reports right now rather quickly. Then we're going to have an audio clip, and when we come back, we'll open it up for our talkback. I'll give you our talkback number. But first, we now have new information that more than 600 different pharmaceutical drugs are polluting our drinking water and environment. And this is not in one report. It's in multiple reports. So you may not see them, you may not taste them, but they're not being filtered out by the standard filters. That means in your tap, coming out of your faucet, could be antidepressants like Prozac and Effexor sedatives, addictive, psychoactive, and anticonvulsant medications, chemotherapy medications, and anti-inflammatory drugs, analgesics, oral contraceptives, antibiotics, hormone replacement therapy, beta blockers. They have all been found in your tap water. Are they dangerous? You bet. And how are they getting into the water? Well, many people dispose of old pills improperly by flushing them down the toilet. However, the largest contributor to pharmaceuticals in the water supply is simply the excretion in feces and urine by humans. People typically excrete part of their daily dosage as a matter of course, but in some cases they are being grossly overprescribed. So the water tap is a serious threat to your health. Make sure that you have a proper filter. It was recently announced that President Obama is making the centerpiece of his environmental issue nuclear. Now, mind you, the most dangerous weapon in the world is a nuclear weapon, and many countries have the nuclear weapon, and many others, like Saudi Arabia, say they're going to get it, and yet we're only looking at Iran as a danger or threat. All countries possessing nuclear weapons, including Pakistan, a rogue nation and a corrupt nation at the military level, government level, also have them. I think it's important that we understand what Obama's agenda is. Obama has made nuclear energy the centerpiece of his climate push. According to Washington Blog from Global Research, in reality, nuclear is not a low-carbon source of energy, and funding nuclear crowds out the development of better sources of alternative energy. Mark Jacobson, the head of Stanford University's Atmosphere and Energy Program, has written numerous books, hundreds of scientific papers on climate and energy, and testified before Congress numerous times on those issues. And he notes that nuclear puts out much more pollution, including much more CO2, than wind power, and 1.5% of all nuclear plants built have melted down. Jacobson also points out that it takes at least 11 years to permit and build a nuclear plant, whereas it takes less than half that time to fire up a wind or solar farm. And between the application of a nuclear plant and flipping the switch, the power is provided by conventional energy sources, currently about 65% coal. No wonder a former commissioner of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission says that that building nuclear plants to fight global warming is like trying to fight global hunger by serving everyone caviar. So we should be appalled that he would allocate and propose $1 trillion for nuclear. This is why we have a completely failed infrastructure, bridges, tunnels, dams. We don't have good water sources for New York City and other major cities. Whole communities, counties are going dry. We should be doing all we can to improve the quality of our infrastructures, and we're doing nothing. We have 18 million hungry children, and yet there is no program to help these children. Yet $1 trillion for those who lobby for nuclear and put the big money into the campaign chests of the Democrats and Republicans alike, you bet. So it's bad to the bone. I hope that you go up on the website today and watch Knocking on the Devil's Door, Our Deadly Nuclear Legacy, because it will show you how bad it is and why you should not support nuclear as an energy source at all. Also, from L.J. Devon, smart meters mandated by government spontaneously exploding, setting off fires in private homes. Here's what it says. Jolted awake at 1 in the morning, Veronica of Ontario, Canada, woke to the sound of a loud revving car engine. That's how she described the noise that was growing outside of her home. She looked outside and quickly noticed a burning light outside the house, lighting up her backyard. As the revving up sound grew louder, the lights in the house dimmed, and suddenly the lights went out and an explosion went off. Consumed by the smell of burning plastic and a fear that people were trying to burn down her house, she rushed to the landline phone only to realize it was dead. The smoke alarms weren't working either. Reaching for her cell phone and rushing outside, she saw the fire scaling and crawling across the back of her home. The burst, the crackling, the popping were coming from the recently installed government-mandated smart meter. Firefighters on the scene confirmed that the faulty smart meter caused the fire, a problem that continues to be reported throughout North America. Now, on May 15, 2015, a resident in Dallas, Texas, the homeowner, was not as fortunate when a smart meter broke out unexpectedly. 74-year-old James Humphrey did not make it out alive when a faulty smart meter exploded and burned down his home without warning. Trapped in his bedroom with heavy flames roaring around him, Humphrey was unable to escape and was found charred on the bedroom floor when firefighters located his body. These are not unusual. This is only the tip of the iceberg, representing multiple thousands of cases of where smart meters have caused unexpected fires, burning down homes. And in fact, PGE has reportedly replaced at least 70,000 faulty smart meters in Oregon alone. That's 70,000 in one state. In Pennsylvania, PECO, P-E-C-O, the utility, replaced at least 186,000 of the government-mandated meters. What's worse is that homeowners like Veronica, who have experienced the smart meter fires firsthand, are not getting a choice to have their old analog meters back. And by the way, when they put a smart meter on my home, I immediately went in and confronted them and told them I would be suing them within the hour, and they took it out, because I would have. You got to confront them. You have a right not to have it, and let the utility say, no, you keep your analogs. I'll do in a later show showing you the real purpose of smart meters. It has nothing to do with lowering your cost of electricity. It has everything to do with monitoring. And finally, before we go to a break, I want to thank Kelly Patricia O'Meara. She does such a good job on showing through original investigative reporting what's wrong with the psychiatric model for mental health. And following the theater shooting in Lafayette, Louisiana, that we're all aware of last week by John Russell Hauser, Representative Tim Murray, a Republican of Pennsylvania, released a statement in which he expressed his sympathy for the families of the victims and also his anger that our, quote, mental health system had failed and more families have been destroyed because of Washington hasn't had the courage to fix it. Well, sorry. Representative Murphy, you're wrong. The government has tried to fix this, and that's the problem. Hauser among a growing list of shooters who are not only receiving lengthy mental health services, they're in the system, but have also been prescribed mind-altering psychiatric drugs as treatment. So Representative Murphy, while eager to use acts of senseless violence to push for increased mental health services, is failing to even consider Hauser's psychiatric drug treatment as a potential cause of crime. According to his estranged wife, Kelly Maddox Hauser, was, quote, prescribed medication to take daily. Despite 22 international drug regulatory warnings on psychiatric drugs citing effects as mania, hostility, violence, and even homicidal ideation, there has yet to be a federal investigation on the link between psychiatric drugs and acts of senseless violence. So, we have been treating people. We've been mistreating them. People who have any form of psychiatric disorder, mental health disorder, do not need drugs as their primary care. They need humanistic, holistic, psychiatric and psychological help. Then you can help them, and you have far less likelihood of someone going into a theater or any place else and killing people. Virtually every mass shooter that we have seen has been on psychiatric drugs, and yet they keep saying it's the guns. It's not the guns. It's the psychiatric drugs. I hope someday we have the courage just to be honest about that so we can deal with the problem. Over-medicated society profiting off other people's natural life experiences and their crisis. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from a well-known rapper, not so much in the United States, but in England. And he is going to address on the Frankie Boyle television program, Is Britain a Racist to the Core? Please stay with us. By the way, for those of you who've been emailing from around the world asking about issues in your countries and how to get support for different causes, we have put up daily over 100 articles, calls to action, support groups around the world. So we look at everything going on around the world every single 24 hours, and we're posting more stories, more help, then Al Jazeera, the BBC, Huffington Post, all put together. And we are giving the ones that are really important. So we thank the hundreds of millions of searches for our articles, listening to documentaries and clips, and we keep them coming massive amounts on progressive themes every day. Now let's go to the clip.
Now, here to discuss whether Britain is racist to the core, please welcome rapper, poet and journalist Akala. Akala, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
Great that you're here. I'm a big fan. Loving your album, man.
Thank you.
What do you think about this motion?
I think, I wanted to give a short answer, but I can't because it's too complicated a question. I think that when we talk about race, we tend to focus on individual acts of prejudice, which is why UKIP often come up, because they'll overtly say stuff that we find offensive. But unfortunately, the issue of race, if we understand it, is a lot more insidious, and it takes a lot more of a historical view to understand the difference between individual bias and structural racism and privilege. And the idea of Great Britain was intimately tied to the fact that Britain's invaded almost every country on the earth, literally. No, literally, there's a map. You can Google it. And so the idea of our greatness was intimately tied to this idea of empire, which was intimately tied to what Rudyard Kipling calls the white man's burden, to go and civilize all these stupid brown folks that have been writing and having civilizations for thousands of years, but let's forget all of that. And so if we fast forward to today, when we talk about structural racism in Britain, do we have the same institutional disparities in rates of imprisonment that they have in America? Yes, absolutely we do. Do we have the same disparities in terms of who's dying in police custody? Yes, indeed we do. In 2011, we were told we loved Libyans so much we wanted to bomb democracy into them. Less than five years later, we're leaving people fleeing the same conflict to drown in the sea while giving a woman space in a national newspaper to refer to them as cockroaches. And when you refer to humans as cockroaches, that is a mandate for murder. Let's be clear about that. The moment human beings become non-human, that is a mandate for murder, and there's a long historical parallel with that. Today, Germany, the country that bombed this country, you know, in our grandparents' lifetimes, so theoretically the grandchildren of Nazis, can get in and out of England easier than the grandchildren of people from the Commonwealth who fought against the Nazis. And where do they come from? When we talk about immigrants, do we mean people from Australia and New Zealand? Didn't Boris Johnson go to Australia and say, hey, we're culturally the same? Was he talking about the Aborigines when he said that?
We call them expats.
Right. White people have such a different way of classifying themselves that white immigrants are expats. Yeah. And non-white immigrants are immigrants. So when we say immigrants, if we go to border control, we can go there, Yarlswood, and we go and look at who's there. It's not a bunch of white people from New Zealand. So we have structural forms of privilege and bias that are much more insidious and much more difficult to overcome. The reaction to Africans and Asians coming here post-World War II, to rebuild the country after the Queen's German cousins bombed it, the reaction to them was one of general hatred. It's illogical. These people who had formerly been colonized by Britain had fought in both World Wars. India gave 2.5 million volunteers, for those who don't know. When we talk about being saved by America in the war, we want to talk about being saved by India and Russia. That would be a bit more accurate. But that's a bit inconvenient. But the reaction to those people and their descendants has been one that is about structural bias and privilege. The greatest metaphor for this might be Canary Wharf and Tower Hamlets. Sure. If you look at that predominantly Bengali community that has to look at Canary Wharf every day, how many of those people work in Canary Wharf other than to clean toilets?
I only got into that through Grime. So the first thing, I'm listening to Grime records and they're all rapping about E14.
Yeah.
And I'm going, where's that? And I'm like, Canary Wharf?
Yeah, they're definitely not rapping about Canary Wharf. I suppose what I'm saying is not about saying that there's bias and bigotry everywhere in the world. The country my grandparents come from, it's pretty much generally accepted that they don't like gay people. But what's interesting, race even plays a role in that. In Jamaica, we have disgraceful homophobia. No one ever says it's because of Christian fundamentalism. Because even though it is justified in explicitly Christian fundamentalist terms, because only Muslims do bad stuff because of their religion. Because we know almost all the Muslims in the world are brown. Whereas when a German Wings pilot crashes and kills 150 people deliberately, or the man in Norway killed nearly 90 people. I was in Australia when that happened. This is how uniform the agreement is that white people will be portrayed differently. The Australian media referred to Andreas Breivik as having terrorist-like tactics.
Yeah.
I mean, to think about it. Yeah. This guy killed almost 100 people, and he's just almost a terrorist.
And he'd written a crazy thing about Muslims.
Oh, it's very clear. I mean, he was a terrorist by any standard. The idea that white is right isn't just a European idea. It's an idea that has had insidious implications, because no matter what, the 700 people that were left to drown off the coast of the Mediterranean, were they white human beings, they wouldn't have been left to drown. And they certainly wouldn't be called cockroaches.
Casual discrimination isn't exclusive to Britain, of course. Let's see how one Australian news anchor dealt with the issue of race while talking to a pair of twins in this incredible clip.
One of the sisters is obviously black, the other is white.
The Alma twins come from a mixed race family in the UK. Maria has taken after her half Jamaican mum with dark skin and brown eyes and curly dark hair, but Lucy got her dad's fair skin, good on her, along with straight red hair and blue eyes.
At least she was honest.
What gets me about it is we have this whole talk during the election about the Australian point system. Let's be more like Australia. Australia is one of the most racist countries in the world.
Yeah.
And also they're putting forward the idea that black people don't belong in their country when all the white people get skin cancer. And the original people were black. I mean, they were treated as flora and fauna.
Until 1967, they were legally classified as flora and fauna. Plants and animals.
I mean, this is what we're supposed to aim at. And there's nowhere in the election campaign where I've seen that said. There's no one said Australia's not a good model.
Well, this is who Boris Johnson says we're culturally similar to. So at least he's being honest about at least his section of British society.
OK, well, let's have a look at an actual conversation that happened on Facebook recently. So I'm saying, off tomorrow for Poland Day. What the fuck? Never heard of it. Why? And we don't get a fucking day off for St. George's Day. What a joke this place is. As you say, they don't stay off for St. George's Day, so who gives a flying fuck about Poland Day? For fuck's sake, it's for the Poles, we're British.
We're sorry for the...
Are you sure it's not lack Poland of, Day?
Sorry for the lack of editing of my engineer staff in New York City, but for the bulk of that, you understood what he was saying. I thought he was extremely articulate. I would like for you to respond. Our talkback segment deals with the following issue. How would you go about addressing the racism in our society that is not seen and not heard? All right? That is the type that is permeated by our institutions, but disguised or denied. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, while we're waiting for your calls to come in and your comments on racism, because we don't like talking about racism in the United States, and when we do, we generally have the people from Fox and conservative radio saying, you know, that we're not racist. And I want to hear from everyone who has a point of view to share it now. And what would you do about it? How could you change a system? I'm not going to share my ideas. I share my ideas on so many topics. I want you to share yours on that. Now, while you're waiting on that, here's the latest. I said some time ago that the reason we're addressing the injustice of the mandatory vaccine in California was because it's not just California. There were more than 111 other bills introduced in all 50 states, all by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, sponsored by the vaccine manufacturers and their lobbyists and others. Because once you establish a mandate in one state, then all the other states duplicate that. And that was just to get the states to do it, because behind the states will be a federal mandate. So first it's with the children, then it becomes something of adults. Now, the latest is coming out of the federal government, and we're going to be doing a whole one-hour special on it. They now are proposing, at the federal level, no exemptions for religion or philosophy for vaccines, and mandatory for all adults. How bad could it be? This is from Christian England, from VacTruth. Quote, in a recent article published by Robert Kennedy Jr. entitled Children at Risk, Vaccines, Government, and Big Pharma Dirty Money, he highlighted the fact that every vaccine introduced to the vaccine schedule guarantees its manufacturers millions of customers, increasing vaccine revenue by billions of dollars. However, it appears that a minimum of 56 doses of vaccines before the age of 18 is not quite lucrative enough for the pharmaceutical industry. According to Robert Kennedy's research, the CDC has 271, I repeat, 271 new vaccines under development in the hopes of vaccine revenues reaching $100 billion a year. Kennedy called the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, quote, a cesspool of corruption, mismanagement, and dysfunction, making it crystal clear that it's the financial gains fueling the decisions that making it mandatory. Here's what he said, quote, public health may not be the sole driver of CDC decisions to mandate new vaccines. Four scathing federal studies, including two by Congress, one by the U.S. Senate, and one by the Health and Human Services Inspector General, paint CDC as a cesspool of corruption, mismanagement, and dysfunction, with alarming conflicts of interest subordinating its research, regulatory, and policymaking functions. CDC allows vaccine industry profiteers like Dr. Offit to serve on advisory boards that add new vaccines to the schedule. In a typical example, Offit in 1999 sat on the CDC's Vaccine Advisory Committee and voted to add the rotavirus vaccine to CDC's schedule, paving the way for him to make a fortune on his own rotavirus vaccine. Offit and his business partners sold the royalties to his rotavirus vaccine patent to Merck in 2006 for $182 million. But Offit told Newsweek, quote, it was like winning the lottery. So here's the deal. First, they get one state, California. They pay a lot of legislators, and they get the legislators to do their bidding against the will of the citizens. Then they get stations completely dysfunctional and not even a value to listen to, like KPFA, Pacifica's station, and its management, to support censorship and the exclusion of fair debate and comment and critical analysis of the vaccine issue. Therefore, a few very important voices that could have educated the public who was undecided or even pro-vaccine and letting the legislation go through may have changed the course of that outcome. So you can now include Pacifica, many of its stations, most of the liberal community, as pro-vaccine, pro-big pharma, pro-corporate, even though they will not say they're pro-corporate profits. They're not the profits, they're for the medicines, but the medicines have not been proven safe and effective, so you're for the same thing. And as a result, they passed it. They will use this in every state, and then they'll do it federally, and then you one day will wake up, and you'll be told you must take a whole series of vaccines. You'll say, well, I'm not a kid. I don't have to take them. I took them sometime in my childhood. They say, well, those are worn off. It's the government policy, and if you don't do it, there'll be repercussions. I'll tell you what those repercussions will be on an upcoming program. Let us go to the calls now. We have a bunch. Let's say hello to Joshua from New Jersey first. Hi, Joshua, your turn.
Hello, Gary.
Yes.
Hi. I just want to quickly state, everything you do, everything you say, please keep doing it. We really need free speech radio in America today. Okay.
Thank you.
So
Thank
I believe
you.
The question was, how do you confront invisible racism? Right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, I'm basically as white as you can get. You can see me like sparkling in the daylight. Sometimes it's really bad. So there's only one way to do it. It's I can see it. I know it exists. The only way to confront it is to actually like grab someone on the street who is just like sitting down, relaxing, and be like, hey, what do you think of this issue? And you just talk about it. And if they're actually interested in it, you'll find yourself having like a 30-minute conversation on it. That's the only way to do it.
Okay, let's do this. Joshua, let's start by the idea that it is important, and I agree with you, but let's not stop a person on the street. Why not set up a blog to have open discussions on the issues and ask church groups, synagogues, mosques, would you open up a forum on racism, silent racism in the communities, and have responsible people there and all members of a congregation give their input. Let them give pro or con or whatever their points are. So it's not one person in 30 minutes. It could be 1,000 people and then exponentially tens of thousands of people from one church talking on an issue. The more people that become aware that we have a problem in different ways they didn't know, the more likely we are to get some people understanding how deep-seated it is and what we need to change it. I appreciate your input. Thank you, Joshua.
Thanks, sir.
Let's say hello to Edward from New Jersey. Edward, your turn.
What you do about what you call racism is to stop attacking the most civilized people in the history of the planet Earth. Wherever the English people have gone, they have turned a prehistoric Stone Age into a civilized country, in particular the United States and Australia. If you were to take from the world, from the high cultures of England and Germany, the cultural achievements of those countries, the world balance would range from mediocrity to barbarity. It is tragic that you did not grow up.
Hold on a second. It's fine to make such statements. We support freedom of speech. But would you please do the following? Would you do an honest read of one of the greatest historians of all time on the true history of America, true history of the world? Take a look at any of the great history books and say, what was wrong with the cultures in North America, South America, Africa, before they were colonized? Look at India before it was colonized. It had over 1,000 religions. And look at the Arabian cultures that long before England was even a civilization, they already had discovered algebra and language and science and chemistry. So I think that you should go back a little further in your history instead of giving credit to those who colonized for making the heathen or those of low intellect or those of low social value into civilization's centerpiece of look what we did to save these heathens and people's skin. History is a wonderful thing. If you read the unabridged, honest history of the world, then you may change your perspective. Let's now say hello to Harvey from Berkeley, California. Hi, Harvey, your turn.
Hi, Gary. Well, I think we need what I call a flash change of consciousness. You know, this is a slap in the face to the creation. The creation gave us the gift of variety, the spice of life, everything being different. If everything were the same, it would be so boring so fast, it would be unbelievable. And I think that that's what we need here on the planet today, because when we go into space and encounter the true other, how are we going to relate to them if we can't even appreciate each other or learn to live with each other?
Harvey, did you ever read Black Elk Speaks?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I traveled in doing my research for Stopping All American Genocide Machine, one of my very first major books on the state of the Native American. And some of the most beautiful poetry, insights, philosophy, and ethics for living and morality were from the great wise men and women of the Native American tribes. So when we think that somehow we brought them civilization, we didn't. When we brought them a sense of understanding, communication, living, we didn't. Truth and their reality far exceeded what came after that. So read those to get an idea of how important it is to look at people who have been subjugated throughout their thousands of years and understand they had a truth that we could benefit from today. I appreciate your call, Harvey. Thank you, and thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.